Thank you, Lup.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Wednesday, November 19th, 2025. And this is a collective bargaining session between the UCF chapter of the United Faculty of Florida and the bargaining team representing UCF's Board of Trustees. The first thing we'll do this afternoon is review the minutes from our last bargaining session of October 29th. And Charlie, thank you for posting those for us. Is there anything to say about these minutes? Any changes that we need to make?
No, looks good to me.
Looks good.
All right, super, super. Thank you. All right, we consider those minutes approved. And then Charlie, I guess we got somebody that says their name is misspelled. We'll try to check that.
Yeah, Christine, no, I think I already let you into the, you're a presenter already, Christine, which means you're already up here. It's fine. If you're Christine Kugelman, it doesn't say, sorry.
Okay. We'll get that, that corrected.
I think it's fine.
All right. The next thing that we wanted to do, the UFF has said that they have a response to the MOU that we proposed last time for the internal advisory panels. And Robert, we'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
Sure. So the bargaining team met and we can sign off on the MOU IAP, which doesn't come natural off the tongue. We can think of another title that might be more pleasant, but we're good with it. We can sign off on it.
All right.
So if you want to send it to me, I don't know. I mean, we sign MOUs, right? Yeah, you got to.
Right, we will. We will.
So yeah, if you can send it to me, and I'll sign it.
We'll send that to you. And Robert, there's just one thing I want to make sure that we're all on the same page on this. In the MOU, very near the end, there's a sentence that says, except for grievances for which an IAP is appointed, the grievance process will proceed only as outlined in Article 20 of the current CBA. And, you know, I guess what we want to make sure that everybody understands what is meant by that is the standard thing is that the grievance would proceed according to Article 20. In the event that an IAP is requested either by the grievant or representative or the Step 2 reviewer, the IAP would be convened and would provide input within 14 days, and then we would resume the regular portion of the Step 2 grievance process. So this is just the MOU temporarily interrupts the regular Step 2 portion of the grievance process. And then after the IAP is done in 14 days, we go back and do the regular rest of the Step 2 process.
That just is how sure I understood it.
Okay, great. Then we're on the same page. And I figured we probably were, just wanted to make sure. So we will get that prepared for signature. And I want to say thank you for agreeing with us on that MOU. I think we really need to give the majority of the credit to you and your team, Robert, because you actually are the ones that introduced us to that idea. You had found that type of proposal from FAU. And as we got to review it and think about it and talk about it, there were a number of things that we really thought were good about it. We made some changes. It's a little bit different than what FAU has done, but we wouldn't be at this point if you hadn't shared that with us. So we're very grateful that you did. So with that in mind, what we were planning to do next is to share with you how we would envision utilizing both that MOU and Article 20. So we wanted to share our number two on Article 20 with you. And there's some things that are just very slightly different that I'll point out. And most of what we've got in Article 20 is exactly what you've seen before. The first thing that I want to point out is in lines 45 to 68. As I was reading through Article 20 again recently, in lines 28 and 29, it talks about forms that are referenced in Section C. But the forms really were talked about in Section D. So what we are proposing here is to just flip the order of Section C and D here, not changing any of the language whatsoever, just simply changing the order. And, you know, it fits better with what it says in lines 28 and 29. And it makes sense in our view to sort of define what these different grievance forms look like before we talk about combining multiple grievance forms in a single grievance if we were to try to consolidate. So no change in the language, just a change in the order of those 2 points in that particular section. The next thing I wanted to point out is on line 139. In line 139, as it stands right now, in the status quo language, there's a 30-day postponement period that's possible. At one time, the UFF had proposed 45 days to us. We had actually come to the point where we were ready to say, okay, on the 45 days, and with your next proposal, you went back to 30. And just to be clear that we're accepting your revision to 30. I didn't want to delete anything. I'm writing 30 in right here. It's all caps here, but it would not be, if we were to come to terms on Article 20, we would write that 30 in lowercase. But we want to point out that, you know, this is a place where I think our discussions and the proposals that we've shared back and forth has led to a point where, you know, we're with you suggesting that in line 139, that should say 30 days. And then...
Well, can I say something here, Chuck? Do you mind if I interrupt?
Not at all. Please, go ahead.
Sure. So Friday of last week, I actually sat in person at the USF bargaining session. And they were discussing their grievance article, and they convinced the USF team to move from 30 to 45, which I thought was really interesting. So I think maybe in future negotiations, we might want to return to the 45 versus the 30 if USF seemed to be you know, okay with that change. Perhaps UCF can
You know, I think that's something that we should keep in our minds as we go forward. What we've done, I don't know what USF is doing with regard to possible things like the internal advisory panel, but that's something that's going to potentially decelerate or drag out the grievance process. So keeping this at 30 for now, anyhow, seems to make a lot of sense, given that we may be inserting an additional step in some cases. But I agree. Let's see how things go with the IAP. Let's see how things are going with the grievances. And certainly every time this Article 20 is open, the length of the postponement period is something that we can talk about, explore, and consider alternatives. So, you know, we kind of like the 30 right now with where we are and with the idea of incorporating the internal advisory panels. But at some point, as we get more experience with these things, you know, I could see us possibly being open to a change. But thank you for sharing it. I guess in your new role, you get to find out a lot about what's going on at various
places. I do.
You are a valuable source of information.
I also, Chuck, I also found out, too, that USF offered their faculty a 2% base raise while at the same time telling them that they had no money for raises, which I thought was interesting. I just will share that with you.
Thank you for letting us know. I appreciate that.
No problem.
I'd like to advance to lines 195 to 208. And here, what we had done in our original proposal for Article 20, we had suggested mimicking the language for the step one process to talk about a possible postponement period for a grievance that's originally filed at step two. And we'd like to continue to suggest that. I think we always would have honored a request for a postponement, but we thought it was a good idea to formalize that in here. The same change that we just talked about on line 139 comes up here as well. At one point, Robert, your team had suggested that we include 45 days here, then you'd come back to us, no, maybe with the IAP, the 30 is enough. We agree. We're saying we agree with you on the 30 days with acknowledging that at some point we may want to reconsider that, and we are certainly open to doing that in the future. But the bulk of 195 to 208 is not new. What's the only thing that's really new here is that we reverted from 45 that we had proposed to, or that we had were willing to agree to your proposal, and then we accept your most recent proposal of 30.
So, Chuck, in this step here, the request is like informal in that it's in an email or something. There's not like a form.
Correct.
That's in the CBA, right?
Yeah, Charlie, you're the one that handles these. These things are coming in by email, as I understand it. Well, on the form, you indicate that you want a postponement. I'm sorry, it does say that.
45 seconds.
Oh, so it is a
That's
form.
What you got. And
I don't know whose microphone is on. I would call it, but sorry about that. I guess That's I think right. it was temporary.
All right. So it is on a form somewhere?
It is on the form to request a postponement. It's on
Good to know.
Both of the appendices that deal with grievance filings, the step one and the step two. And then the area in between the two red sections is a footnote that we are proposing for recognition of the MOU that we have just come to terms on. And this footnote, the footnote is at the bottom of the page, but the indication that there is a footnote is near the top of this page where step two is mm-hmm. beginning to be introduced and discussed. And this footnote says that beginning on the ratification date of the 2025-2027 CBA and ending on the sunset date specified in the attached MOU regarding internal advisory panels, the parties have agreed to pilot an optional internal advisory panel, IAP, that would make an independent assessment of the grievance allegations and, when appropriate, make recommendations to the Step 2 reviewer on disciplinary actions or remedies prior to the issuance of the Step 2 decision at the university level within 14 days of appointment of the full IAP. The MOU appears at the end of this document. So what we are proposing is that now that we've agreed on this MOU, if we can agree on the rest of Article 20, including this footnote, we would just simply insert the MOU at the end of the rest of the CBA, and this footnote would point to it. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that if we really wanted to do that, we normally don't print hard copies of these successor agreements like this. We do it for the 3-year full books, but I'm guessing on the online version we could even have a hot link to that MOU. I don't necessarily know how to do that myself, but
I'm
confident somebody will figure out how to do that.
So I can make that, it part of the online version for sure, Chuck.
Okay, so that's how we're proposing that we would incorporate the MOU into Article 20. And that is it for Article 20.
That's it for 20?
That's it for 20.
All right, so I'll take a look at it with the bargaining team, and we meet again December, is it 12th or something?
10th is the next time we meet.
10th. So I think we could have a response December 10th.
Okay. Thank you very much. And then the next thing that we were anticipating is that I think Talat wants to speak for your team about a response to our Article 23.
Okay, is that on right now? All right, so let me do this. Let me share my screen. And let's see, I will go there and I'll go to presentation. Can you see my screen?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. This is not how it should have been. I should have gone all the way. Okay, let me see if I can do that. Okay, so you see the first slide, which says?
Yes.
All right, okay, so, so this is where we are right now. And what I'm presenting is a PowerPoint that was actually, most of it was prepared by the hardworking bargaining unit members, and I'm sort of delivering the message here. And so I need to ask, why are we still negotiating Article 23? The reason for doing that is that, we've been talking to colleagues at other Florida State University system, and this has been taken care of, other than at some places like USF, where they're still talking, but they have something to talk about. But here at UCF, let me just remind everyone that UFF proposal was sent on April 30th, and we had requested an 8% raise, and that was in line with what not just our expectations, but also cost of living increases. But also, when we look cumulatively at the raises that faculty and bargaining unit members, let's say, have gotten at UCF in the past 5 years. We're only looking at past 5 years over here, and also in comparison to what they have got at other campuses. And I should mention over and over again that we know of very few units in the Florida State University system where they have gotten 0% raise, either this year or last year or the year before or the year before. So UCF is an anomaly. And I should also say right up front, UCF is also an anomaly because it has the largest student to faculty ratio. Of course, now it is considered to be a very efficient university where you can put all the burden on the faculty and do the job that needs to be done. And the administration is showing that we don't even have to pay them much. So the BOT proposal was response, and this is April, and now that's, if I can count it, that's a number of months between April and September. And so in September, we get this offer, and that is 0% raise and a one-time payment of $1,000 if you make above $125,000 and $1,500 if you make below that. We then responded, and we thought we'll at least give something to bargain about, because the one that was given to us on September 17th was a non-starter. And so we asked for a 4% raise. And again, this 4%, of course, is even less than what we had asked, is half of what we had asked. But that would have been something. So then the question that we have to ask is there any correlation of the above with what's going on in the Florida State University system. The reason that is important is because our funds are coming from the same place. And almost every institution is telling its bargaining unit that they have no money. And yet they're able to go and find the money for raises. Okay. I also want to ask the question, is there any correlation with faculty morale at UCF? You know, I appreciate that that UCF administration is finding ways to get feedback from faculty. But faculty are actually even afraid, don't even want to go to these sessions because they feel it's worthless. It's a waste of their time. They would rather spend their time getting their work done and or going somewhere else. I'm sorry that I have to sound this way. This, I did not even bother to update this. This is a something that I had presented a few months ago. And that was in August, where, you know, all these places had offers. And these were just offers. They were negotiating this because they thought that this was not good enough. For Florida Gulf Coast, they already had 2% across the board, one-time payment of $2,300. Florida Poly had an offer ranging between 2.5 to 1%, and also a one-time bonus that averaged $3,000. Florida State University has a very interesting way. They did, you know, they had their promotion is much higher than ours. Promotion is higher than ours in almost in not all of them, but most of them. Promotion of 12% and 15%. PTR is again, in Florida State University, it's different. I just raised those things, but let's just talk about just the raises. That was 2.5% and of course there's a formula by which they do it, but there's something to be talking about, okay? Performance is 1.55, then you get these others, and so you can get anywhere between 1.55 to 2.25. UF, that was just an offer, 3%. When they say merit, is anybody getting satisfactory or above 3%? And then UNF is the one that where they said they had received no recurring funds, so they made their offer was a one-time payment of $2,200. I don't know if they have accepted these things, but these are the offers. So they are they probably have reached agreements in all of these places. FIU had negotiated a three-year pay raise last year. They got a pretty good big pay raise last year. They had one for this year, one for next year. Of course, FIU has had a change of leadership. They said they had insufficient funds. Regardless of that, they were still able to get 1.45% raise and then a one-time bonus of between 1,000 and 2,000. Okay. UWF, West Florida, they got this was negotiated. This is, again, I'm talking about August when I had reached out to them. And they got a 3 to 4%, depending on how you were evaluated, raise to the base salary. And they got a bonus that was also corresponding to that. USF, as you've heard from Robert, they still have the offer of 2% and they keep rejecting it. You give us an offer of 2%, we will accept it. That's how bad things are over here. Okay, again, I'm just going to go over this, but and we can put in more numbers because this slide is not totally complete. Before I send it to you, I'll complete it because I think we did get one-time payments the other times too, so I'll put that in. But what I did want to point here is that there are 2 years in these 5 years where we got 0%. So the point is that we are at a point where, you know, we know what would have happened. You would have come to us and said, look, Christmas is around the corner, and if you don't accept our offer of $1,000 or $1,500, depending on who you are or how much you make, I'm sorry, not who you are, how much you make, that accept it. Otherwise, you know, there'll be complaints because this is just, people will not have any money before the holidays. So what we did, we had very little time to prepare this, but we sent out a survey to bargaining unit members. And the really 2 business days that we gave them, because we wanted to have things in hand so that we would know what our next steps would be. And so what I'm going to do is the summary that my colleagues have prepared, and these are all the colleagues who are in the bargaining caucus. And one of the figures that they got, and the you know, you'll be getting these slides, so you'll know where the source is, that, you know, we're talking about now people making reasonable living, right? We're not talking about just living wages, because we're talking about colleagues who have PhDs, who are, you know, or at least or a terminal degree, and they are fully employed at UCF and helping UCF get to preeminence or get preeminence. And so that figure came out to be about 100K. And this is about the figure that we've been using at UCF as our average salary when we when we have been doing the negotiations for the past so many years. So a rough, you know, just so that people have an idea of what we are talking about. If this is the thing, then if we talk about 1% raise, we are talking about 1.7 million to give 1% raise to all in unit. Again, you have to give also to those who are not in unit, but you can double the number. If you're talking about a 2% raise, then, or a 4% raise, then you can multiply 1.7 by 4, that is 5.4 million. You can then say, okay, it's not just the in-unit faculty, we also need to get everybody else. Okay, then, you know, but we're talking about things about the order of few million, between $5 to $10 million when we're talking about 4 point. You didn't even offer us 2%. So 2% would have been like 3.4 million. And adding other people, it still would have been maybe altogether 5 million. We can work out the numbers, but that's what it is. 56% of faculty members, and we should say not just faculty members. When we say faculty, we mean all those who are in the bargaining unit. 56%, that is 970 colleagues, make less than 100K a year. So we need to remember that. We need to remember what it costs to live in Orlando, and what are we doing to our faculty members, who are the role models for our students, for our postdocs, for everybody around here, and who we are preparing as the next generation. So the question is there no money, as UCF seems to imply? One of the thing, and we have the full analysis, I'll just present you some numbers, but the average administrative salary in the period 2021 to 2025 was 24.26%. 24.26%, okay? All right, these are a handful of people, or maybe compared to, you know, 1,700 faculty, these may be, you know, 50 people or so. But we're talking about people who are making a lot of money, okay? And people then, you're finding this 24%, okay? So, you know, math is something that I have to do all the time, right? I'm a physicist. So, you know, we're talking about small numbers here. We're talking about money that can be found, right? And this is the raise that we got in the past 4 years. This is, we're talking all cumulative, right? And then we look at the consumer price index, and, you know, our administrative, their salary raises are, you know, if we look at that, it's keeping up with consumer price index, but not that of the faculty. Okay, so we did this survey, and usually when you send out surveys in this time and people are disgruntled about how things are going, they already know what the offer is. We didn't expect too many responses. But within 2 days, we got 664 responses, okay? That's a remarkable turnaround from a response that you get to surveys like this. I did not, by the way, respond. So it's not like I, you know. Okay, so, and they are from all over, okay? You see the numbers here. They're from the College of Sciences, Arts and Humanities, you know, education, engineering, health professions, business, nursing, and some didn't want to say where they were from, Rosen College of Management and College of Optics and Photonics. So everyone participated. We did not want to proceed without getting feedback from the unit. And this is what we got. They emphasized that the payment fails to address the years of salary stagnation, ignores compression and inversion, and bears no relationship to workload realities. The question was, do you feel that one-time payment offered by President Cartwright is adequate compensation for the work of in-unit faculty in achieving preeminent status? 96% said no, it is not. Okay, so then the other was, do you feel that UFF-UCF bargaining team should continue to negotiate with the BOT representatives to bargain for greater compensation, higher one-time payment, and or percentage raises? Then they showed us. 92% said, please continue to bargain. They did not tell us, go and sign off on nothing. Okay, so those were those two. Then, you know, about, depending on which question you look at, about 220 to 350 people gave us comments. I mean, we've got pages and pages of comments, and from different people. And we just picked up some of the things that seem to resonate. The first is, compensation inequity is undermining the institution. And in the words of the faculty, in the way they're thinking, compensation and respect are inseparable. The second is, faculty morale has reached a breaking point. I don't know if we want to say we're breaking point. Maybe it will go down even, I mean, I hope not. But the burnout is systemic and they're tired of it. And I think the example that the other Florida universities are setting, even though faculty there are also not happy that they're being treated as well as they think they should be treated, but the question of getting a few percent raise, even in a year where none of them have received much funding or extra funding, is not an issue. They seem to be able to get it. But somehow, our administrators have decided that faculty is not the one they're going to put their money on. So, and this is what's the misaligned institutional priorities undercut academic work. The other thing is transparency and trust are eroding. You know, I went to one of these sessions that was organized. There were colleagues there, there were colleagues there that I did not know. And they were from colleges where I didn't think they would be thinking too much about transparency. I'm not going to name the colleges. And I was amazed that the unanimous response from colleagues sitting there who were either from, you know, had been here long enough, as long as I have been, or less than me, half as more, or just been there a few years, they felt that transparency is missing. We have no idea where funds are going. We have no idea what UCF's priorities are, and no faculty input has been taken into where we are heading. You know, so we're really like these peons who are just being told to go and get the work done, get the job done. The other thing is that workload growth has become unsustainable. And that's not a surprise when you have the faculty to student ratio that we have, the small faculty to student ratio, large student to faculty ratio. And again, so, it's like a broken record.
Right click and then display settings.
Every single time?
No.
Okay.
You choose once.
Okay.
And then
I don't know who's talking. Okay. Then recruitment and retention and challenges are active. So these are just points. So the message is unequivocal. Faculty made UCF preeminent. Faculty sustain UCF's success. It's time for compensation and working conditions that reflect that reality. So what do we want? We want recurring, meaningful raises, government transparency, and reasonable workloads that allow excellence to flourish. Let me just show you a few more of these. You know, this is, again, we'll be using the comments that they have sent because some of them are priceless. So I'll read out a few and we have lots more others. So I've been here since 2022 and only received the 3% raise and one-time payment last year, and looking at no raise this year. I'm effectively making less than when I started. The other one was excellence should be rewarded. Then this one was priceless. A fruit basket would be less insulting. And you can see that this one has caught on, as this is the screen that a number of my colleagues have in the session today. The offer from the university bargaining was insulting and offensive. And then this one, which keeps coming up, there is serious mismanagement of funds at the administrative level. We have no idea what mismanagement is going on. We do know that the chief financial officer has been put on leave. We do know that a whole unit is being reduced to 10% of what they used to be. So when I say unit, I must say that this was not ENG funded unit. It was a unit that was funded on CNG money. I'm sure people have read about it. So we don't have any concrete reasons to talk about mismanagement of funds. But this is what people are saying. We don't know. We can't tell them it isn't. We can't, and we obviously will not say that it is, because we have to have concrete facts in hand before we say that. Then the 1500, it said, doesn't even cover increases to my taxes. With the recent increases in cost of living and even small increases in the cost of our benefits, a non-raise of any kind is crippling. It is essentially a pay cut. And the economy is crushing us, earlier career professors ready to look elsewhere. This is one of the comments. Alexander Cartwright received a handsome bonus for are achieving preeminent status. He claims to appreciate the hard work of all of us who contributed to that accomplishment. Well, talk is cheap. Show me the money. So let me just summarize what I've said here. I think the premise that we are going on is that funds can be found for anything that UCF determines to be its priority. It has done so in the past. It will continue to do so. It is doing that as we speak. Other Florida State University systems have found a way to do it. They're giving, even the one that did not give a percentage raise, that's only one that didn't offer. I don't know what they settled on. At least their one time was higher than ours. And that's a much smaller institution and not as high up in the ranks as we are, and doesn't have as much flexibility in its funding model as we do. UCF has spent money hiring multiple faculty in areas that it prioritizes. There's been no input from faculty, even the faculty in those units, whether that's the way we should be going. They've been hiring like crazy in some areas. And in other areas, people are, you know, breaking their backs just to handle the load that they have. UCF has been rewarding its higher administrators. It finds the money. It takes a few million to do that. It could find a few million to reward the hardworking faculty. But unfortunately, these faculty members, these bargaining unit members, who really were the ones responsible for bringing UCF to this preeminence, they're not its priority. I think it's about time that our administration, our president, our provost, look at all this and come back with something that we can show that, you know, we are not going to be just taken for granted, and that we will continue to work here without any rewards. I mean, it's a bad situation. I'm sorry I have to say this. I think you all believe the same thing as I do. We are all on the same side, but you're not coming up with what is needed. Very little, few percent. You're not coming up with that. Others can do it. You can do it. Thank you.
Well, Talat, thank you for sharing your thoughts. And I appreciate the effort that you put into that presentation. I also appreciate the time that the faculty took to respond to your survey. in a very quick way. And, you know, I hear you. I understand that there's a message that you and the in-unit faculty are sharing with us, and we hear you. And we would appreciate, I know we'll get a copy of those slides, and we can share them with the provost and the president's office. We'll do that. I don't have, you know, a response that I can offer at this time.
Sure.
But I do appreciate that that you share those slides with us, and we will share those with others as well. You know, this is just Chuck speaking right now. I mean, I understand with the offer that we've been able to make, which I understand is about what we're going to be able to do, is low. And compared to other institutions, it's not going to compare favorably, unmistakably. We get that. And, you know, I appreciate that you've given us some data from other institutions. You've got more data than I've got. And I thank you for sharing that as well. So we'll pass this information along, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. And talk again.
I did just wanted to say something because I don't want to slip this. And if you don't mind, I'll quickly show a slide that I don't know. It must have been a Freudian slip, but it just didn't show up. So let me, so that you know that I didn't slip it in. If I may just show it, I'm going to do it for less than few seconds. But let me just share, because I don't know how I didn't do it. But there is a slide. You probably see it. Do you see it now? There's a slide which has some, not all, but few administrators and their salaries and their raises. So that is already part of that. And I will just, I'll probably just stop sharing. And it was there. I think it slipped.
Okay, so that will be included in the file that you sent.
That's in the file. It was there. I don't know how. I think I was talking and I just went over that and didn't dwell on it.
Okay. Well, again, Talat, thank you for sharing that with us. We appreciate all the thought that went into it, and we understand. We understand where you're coming from. Is there anything else that you want to say about 23 today?
I think we've I think we hope that you can go and talk to our administrators and see what their response is.
We will certainly share that, and we'll see what response there may be. I also let your team know that we've invited Rebecca Richards to be with us this afternoon, and she may have some things that she can say about the budget in general. And I'll turn this over to her in a couple minutes. But one thing that I want to just mention that I know a year ago, when we were talking, probably closer to 15 months ago, when we were talking about raises, one of the things that we shared with you, if we look at things on an academic year basis, which is how universities tend to function, and it's how the CBAs are aligned, is based on academic years. We did a table that we presented last year. I don't have access to it right now. I'm not going to try to bring it up. But we had also looked at things on a calendar year basis, and the picture is better for UCF on a calendar year basis than it is on an academic year basis. I'm not saying that UCF has the highest raises when you look at things on calendar years. That's not what I'm saying, but there have been fewer times when the raise has been zero when we look at calendar years rather than academic years. So sometimes it's the angle at which you look at the data as well. So I just point that out.
So Chuck, raise between 2021 and 2025. That's all we want. You can do it calendar, you can do it academic. Any way you count it, it's no more than 9. If you look at other places, it's 17. They're talking about 17 in that period.
And I've got access to all the records that we got about the raises that have taken place over that period. And, you know, We can take a look at that. And I'm not disputing what you shared.
That's
with
why
us
we did an average over 5 years. It's average over 5 years, Chuck.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Before
you introduce Rebecca, I just want to say two people had problems where the audio clipped out, and they found that by logging out and logging back in, it restored their audio. I just want to make sure that everybody, you know, present knows that. And also to respect the ground rules of keeping the conversation about the presentations off the chat. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Charlie. So Rebecca is one of our vice provosts who does integrated academic planning and works with our budget. She's got a lot of knowledge and experience dealing with the budget, and I think she may be able to say a few things about, you know, what has happened in the last couple of years, what's different about this year, she may be able to take a few questions as well. I don't want to put her on the spot too much. She's very graciously come to join us this afternoon. So, Rebecca, if it's all right, I'd like to just turn this over to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Chuck. And thank you, everybody, for allowing me to share some information. I will apologize if this is information that you already have, but I think some of this will help answer some of the questions that came from the presentation that was just provided. When we talk about what our budget is and, you know, we state that we don't have any money, I think it's important to note that the ENG budget from 25 to 26 decreased $24 million. So we had non-recurring money in 25. We had $15 million that was operational excellence, which was used to pay for one-time payments last year. And we had $14 million that was designated for faculty recruitment and retention, which was used for the faculty one-time payments and some other items. Those funds were non-recurring. We did not receive any new recurring money in the current year, which is truly what is needed to be able to properly support recurring costs at the university, supporting recurring costs with non-recurring money. Seems like a recipe for disaster, right? At some point, that money's not going to be there. In the current year, we did receive an additional $5 million. That's why the difference is 24, not 29. And that was also non-recurring. And those funds are being set aside to allow us to provide one-time payments. So I really just wanted to have an opportunity to share the difference in the budget from last year to the current year to make it clear that there was a reduction in the ENG funds that the university has received, and then to help answer any questions if I could.
So actually, Rebecca, if I think what we're talking about is what other places seem to have done is gone through the budget and looked at whether there were some recurring costs that could be not made non-recurring and so on, so to find funds for those, right? So that's that again, we have not had the privilege of sitting down with you guys and going through that. That's one thing. The other is that, you know, we do see salary raises being offered, okay? We have the numbers, you know, and you know, if you're going to give a 50% salary raise to somebody who's already making, say, $300,000, you know, that's a good chunk of money, right? And then if you keep adding up, that very quickly adds up to $1 million, right? And so the question is that we're talking about, let's say they offered 1% raise, right? Then we're talking about $1.7 million. Well, we can look at various places where funds have been spent, and that could have diverted this way. Okay, that's what we're looking at. Okay, we can look at positions that have been given, you know, and when you're giving positions to colleges, and particularly with startup funds and all that, then again, don't get me wrong, I'm all for hiring more faculty because our faculty to student ratio is so low, right? But the point is, when you go doing this without getting faculty on board, I have a feeling that if we had people on board and saying, hey, in order to get to this status, can we all go through some hardship? But then eventually this is how we will all benefit from it. But there is no discussion. I mean, we have long been totally ignored. As you know, there was, you know, some if a couple of provosts, one provost back, at least we were invited to send proposals. And when we did that, then we were told if our proposal did not make it, we were told why it didn't make it. There is no feedback mechanism that goes on. So I think on top of everything else, you know, you basically are not even providing the minimum that other places seem to be getting. It all adds up to a very bad environment, and people don't want to feel a sense of, you know, sense of belonging. And I think what we, you know, it's not money that always does it. There are other ways in which people could be made to feel better. But just simply saying that, you know, you're doing great, and then neither the respect nor the money, it's just a bad deal. It's just a bad deal. And there are so many things we could sit down and talk about. And these, we're amazed, you know, we got 20 pages of just responses, you know, when we put it all together. So that's what we're talking about, Rebecca. And I know you're doing your job. So yeah, go ahead and tell us what you wanted to tell.
No, that's all I have to share. I understand. And I appreciate you.
Rebecca, one of the things that I had said I wasn't going to put you on the spot. I lied. And I apologize for that. Can you give us a rough sense of what portion of the university's budget goes to salaries? And I mean total salaries, not just in-unit faculty.
So the E&G budget?
Yes.
I would be afraid to say a number that's completely incorrect. I can tell you that in the colleges, it is approximately 98% does go to salaries, all personnel, not just faculty. I will add that when you add units like facilities, it gets a little bit different because they also fund things like utilities, right? Turning on the lights and the AC in every building. So the percentage, I would have to look at it, but I can certainly provide a response.
Well, I think you provided a number that's larger than I expected. I expected something to be in the 90%. I wasn't sure it'd be as high as 98. But when, if I understand things correctly, if we get less E&G money and everything is on salaries, at some point, if people are going to get increases, that means there's got to be fewer people.
That's exactly right. When you talk about finding the money and making cuts to be able to afford these raises, that does absolutely mean people.
So let me ask you a question with Rebecca. I don't think you will have the answer for that, but I think when faculty see, and I have this numbers in front of me, somebody who was a faculty member and then this in or bargaining unit member becomes an administrator, their salary jumps up by 87.96%. Okay? When I see someone who is in an associate provost position whose salary in 2022 was $2,460. I don't know what's happening. And now it is 300,000. So 246,000 to 302,000. That's a 52% jump. Okay. I think you can do just the math there and see how those numbers, you know, we're talking about people making over, you know, between 200 to 400,000. And we're talking about big jumps, right? And so when we put it all together, why is it so important that these people continue to get the kind of raises that they get? And why does the administration then think that faculty do not deserve that? If they think that nobody here deserves a very high raise, they should have the same standard for administrators as they have for faculty. But why is it that we in the bargaining unit have to pay this price and not the high administrators who are already making very high salary?
So unfortunately, you would almost have to know the details behind the position, right? Because those don't sound don't sound like salary increases. Those sound like a different job. Well, so it's hard to compare one position to the other if they're essentially receiving an increase because they're doing a different job.
I totally agree. But you know, when you're looking at the point of view of a faculty member who's putting in, you know, and now we're talking about people who are totally engaged in their research, in teaching, in service, in students, in every, you know, believe in everything that is taking UCF to where it is, right? If they feel, I mean, all of us, I'm one of them, we feel that if we didn't do what we are doing, UCF will not be where it is, right? But how is it that these people do not even merit a 2% raise when there are others who are basically, their job is to make sure that we do what we, you know, they're not creators of knowledge. I'm sorry, you know. I mean, hopefully they are creating knowledge somewhere, but certainly that's not their job description, okay? So they're not creators of knowledge. They're not the ones who are educating our students, right? I mean, that's what a university is, right? To produce the next generation and to create knowledge and to do service to the community. These are all being done by the faculty members, right? And how is it that they don't merit even a paltry 4% raise, okay, let alone 8%, when these other people, you know, I would have been not too unhappy. I mean, I still would have been unhappy and would have still been bargaining, but I would say, okay, but they treat administrators the same way too, you know, and each administrator then becomes a different point. And so I think this lack of transparency, this whole thing about how we will reward the ones who are doing what we're doing, which is basically you can go and flog the faculty so they can, you know, produce more and so on. I mean, this is not going to work for a long time. People will find ways and leave. And it takes a lot more to hire a new faculty than to keep one who's already here, right? I mean, when people get offers, you know, they would rather be here if the conditions were better here because it's such a pain to move, right? So I think somewhere the logic is missing in Millikan Hall, and somewhere they either feel that faculty is dispensable, they will come and go, we will just replace them. Then I do ask, do they really believe in quality? Okay, or they feel that we will just focus on a few faculty in a few areas in which we really want excellence, but then the others will just have people come and go, and it doesn't matter. So if we create a two-tier society, a three-tier administrators, this very high-profile faculty that we like, and these others who are basically going to, you know, do what need to do, and they can go, come and go. That is not what a respectable university looks like. I mean, this is the message that we're trying to give. This is not going to get you there. And I'm really sorry because people spend a lot of time. This is something I was coming to my office and somebody said, hey, what are you going to say at the bargaining today? Are you going to get us some money? And so the thing is that, you know, they say this is the year and that is what they're worried about. That, you know, we were told 2025, 2026, this is when we would get something. Now we're told no. And next year, Robert made this case also earlier, next year there will be even less money because of so many things that are happening. So, you know, there's going to be zero now, there'll be zero next year. This is the year when you can do something. So, Rebecca, you are good at accounts. Please go and find the money. I'm sure you can, it's somewhere hidden there.
And I will do my best.
Yeah, go in there and say, that's my charge. If you want me to sit with you, if you find the money. Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Anything else for Rebecca?
No, sir.
Okay, well, Rebecca, I really appreciate you being here this afternoon and appreciate the information that you've shared. One thing that I wanted to mention, Talat, just a bit of a clarification. You've been kind of referring to a 1% raise as $1.7 million. When we do the calculations, we also include benefits. It puts it much closer to 2.1.
Okay. That's good to know. That's good to know. Actually,
you're close. You know, yeah, I think the difference is probably benefits.
Yeah. So about 2.2 or something.
2.1.
I think. Okay. That's a good ballpark.
It can change from day to day as the people here change, but that's the number I've got in my head.
Okay, Chuck, if you and I sat down with Rebecca, I'm sure we'll find that. 2.1 million.
I'm looking forward to getting your slides. We'll share those.
If
that's something that we think would be fruitful, that's something we would let you know that, we could do. But,
I will send it to you all right away.
All right. Appreciate it. Well, I think we've gotten through our agenda for this afternoon, and I appreciate everybody being here. Obviously, also the number of faculty that have elected to be here today says something, and we appreciate that. Robert, you just came on camera again. Do you have something that you wanted to add?
No, I had to step out really quick for a meeting,
all right.
And I came back.
All right, well, I guess we are finished for today. Our next session is scheduled for Wednesday, December 10th, and we'll look forward to seeing you then. Wish you all a great rest of your day, and happy Thanksgiving to all of us.
Happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
All right. Thank you. Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.